The following program contains graphic material, including offensive language. Viewer discretion is advised.
She's got the news. She talks with newsmakers. She encourages us to laugh, and she cries with us. Speaking truth to power and questioning authority daily, it's the Nicole Sandler Show.
So it is. And it's Monday. It's a brand new week. But meet the new week, same as the old week. My goodness, we have so much work to do. John Doe in the chat room says, "What's up, Nicole Sandler? I'm in a shitty mood today." And it started off, I need to stay off of Twitter early in the morning. That's not the only reason. The reason I'm in a shitty mood is because I've realized that the 72 million people who voted for Donald Trump are not the only problem I have right now. We are in a nation of really fucked up people. No matter what side you're on, apparently we've got assholes all around us. And yes, I know I'm one. I can be. I really can be. But, you know, what happened this morning is somebody, I'm not going to give names or anything because that's crazy. But somebody tweeted out, "Just want to put out that if we do another lockdown, I'm fine with teaching from home while other workers are paid not to work. It's called socialism." Well, no, that's not called socialism. That's one aspect of it. And framing it that way, frankly, is no help to anyone. And for my troubles there, oh boy, you would have thought I said this person's mother sucks cocks in hell. So I am a cop lover. I'm a racist. I'm a centrist. It goes on from there. I realize, you know, and I'm guilty like everyone else, because you go on social media, you see somebody post something asinine, you call them out on it, and then you're attacked by their minions. What are we doing? These are people ostensibly on the same side, by the way, people who it's a group of so-called democratic socialists. Well, you know what? Now, do I identify as a democratic socialist? No. Do I appreciate most of what they stand for? Yes. But then it got into a whole discussion of defund the police, which I still maintain is a really horrible slogan. And most of the people who are screaming defund the police don't really mean abolish the police, although some of the people who were coming at me today were saying that. Well, if you don't agree with abolish the police, then what, you know, what good are you? Well, you know what? Sorry, as much as I know that many who are currently on the force are there for the wrong reasons, are probably hopped up on steroids, are power hungry and think they, you know, have a God complex because they think their badge gives them power over the rest of you. I'm anything but a cop lover. But this is the problem with social media. Well, one of the myriad of problems with social media. The people who are coming at me today, they don't know me. They know nothing about me. They didn't bother to even read through my timeline to see if maybe they got the wrong impression. They just are telling me, this is what you are. And to that I say, fuck you. Or I could say it more politely. I could say it in a song. Oops, that's the wrong one. I got to change my thing on there. I could say it in a song. Thing on there. So I know this is when I need to just step away from the Twitter machine. But more depressing than the 72 million or so people who voted for Donald Trump, and more depressing than him, is that the knowledge that the Democrats are as screwed up as the Republicans are. I don't think we have an easy answer. Look, the fact that so many of us, when this is all said and done, it'll probably be 80 million people who voted for Joe Biden. Never before have so many people voted for a presidential candidate. But never before have so many people voted for a presidential candidate in Donald Trump. 72 million votes that he got breaks all the records. So we did we did good in that we turned out the vote. Yeah, we turned out the vote. But we've got bigger problems than that. You know, part of my issue was I don't have a problem with the idea of democratic socialism. In fact, I rather like it. I still have my Bernie Sanders stickers up behind me. I've been a follower of his before most of these democratic socialists who are giving me so much shit today probably ever even heard of the word, right? Yeah, I've been here for a long time. Oh, and that's another thing. I'm old. Somebody dinged me on my age today. Really? That's all you got? Bring it on, twerp. But you know, here we are in a place where people are just sniping at one another. We're ostensibly on the same side, and I know a lot of them had to look up the word ostensibly. Go ahead. The dictionary is your friend. That's when, you know, we appear to be on the same side, but actually might not be. Because I don't think we want to abolish the police. We need better police. We should probably start every police force over from scratch, fire everyone, then let them apply for their jobs back and make sure they pass a psychiatric exam or psychological exam to show they're fit for the job, to show they're not, you know, roid crazy and on a power trip, to show that they understand what community policing is about. We need to change the way we police in this country, but you want to be a lawless society without any law enforcement? I don't. Who are you going to go to if you get raped? Who are you going to go to when a guy, you know, who's hopped up on whatever meth, who wants his next fix, and he pulls a knife on you? Really? You think we can police ourselves? You think we'll be okay without any law enforcement in this country? We need better law enforcement. We don't need no law enforcement. But I guess we're all under the Democratic tent. Except, and look, I fight against the Democratic Party every fucking day, and I take more heat from the centrist Dems or as much as anybody else. Let me put it that way. And so they're telling me, well, you're not part of us. If you don't think we should abolish the police, then you don't know what you're talking. Well, I know what I'm talking about. I don't agree with you. And do I think the defund the police messaging hurt us in a lot of places? Yes. Just like the socialist label did, especially here in South Florida, where two seats that were held by Democrats in Miami-Dade County, as Howie Klein told us on Thursday, a D5 and a D+6 district both lost. And I'll tell you, it's probably not the only reason, because nothing is mutually exclusive. Nothing operates in a vacuum. But the fear-mongering around the word socialism did a number down here in South Florida, because we've got a lot of immigrants. And it wasn't only the Cubans. It was the Puerto Ricans who should, you know, come on. Look at how Donald Trump reacted to Hurricane Maria. Paper towels, anyone? And people from Puerto Rico who came here to Florida voted for Donald Trump. I don't know why, but somebody in the Democratic Party better figure it out. Now, again, I'm old, as you know, was pointed out to me on the Twitter this morning. I'm old. What? I'm useless at this point. I'm ready to turn it over to the young people, especially like the group of people we got to know from Marjorie Stoneman Douglas High School, which is 10 minutes from where I'm sitting. I'm ready to turn it over to them because they know what they're doing. But these people who attacked me on Twitter this morning, hell fucking no. Now, I have run and won a seat as a precinct committee person for where I live here in Broward County, Florida. Is that what I want to do? No. But I think I have to, because Florida, the people who run the Florida Democratic Party, every last one of them should be sent packing. The people who are in leadership in the Democratic Party proper should be sent packing. I learned today that Tom Perez is not going to run for re-election as chair of the DNC. Thank God. Talk about a failure. Maybe if Keith Ellison had been given the shot and not derailed by the party, elders a couple of years ago when the two of them were running, more than a couple of years ago now, things might be different. Tom Perez was toothless and worthless in that job. He did not belong there. So now it looks like a race between Jamie Harrison, who raised zillions of dollars in his race to challenge Lindsey Graham. He showed he can raise money, but he also showed he can't use all that money to win an election. And the other name being floated is Stacey Abrams, who has shown she can raise money, she's effective, she can motivate people, and she knows what she's talking about. Is she as progressive as I'd like? No. But we're not going to get somebody as progressive as I'd like. And as progressive as I am, and those of you who've listened to the show for any amount of time certainly know. All morning long on Twitter, I was attacked as a centrist, a cop lover, whatever they want to call me, that's fine. You know what? When it's somebody who knows me, who wants to ascribe these qualities or lack of qualities to me, then I would listen. But some rando on Twitter, get a life. Get a fucking life. So I'm disillusioned with both sides. The idiots who went marching this weekend, and sorry, Kayleigh McEnany, there were no millions. There was not a million people there. There were maybe 10,000, maybe even more. But it didn't even approach 100,000, and they had the audacity to call it the Million MAGA March. Oh, please, 65 days can't pass quickly enough, and that's the problem. 65 days is not fast. 65 days is slow. And we have an asshole in the Oval Office who refuses to leave, who refuses to admit defeat, who refuses... we were also worried, oh my God, he may not agree to a peaceful transfer of power. There's no may anymore. He's not. And although all his lawsuits have fizzled out and they've pulled out the resources and now Rudy Giuliani's in charge of all his challenges, the fact remains that that woman, Emily, at the GSA, is still not writing the ascertainment or signing the ascertainment to let the transition officially begin. And that is dangerous. And in the meantime, we're all infighting among ourselves. Defund the police is a stupid, stupid slogan. Okay. And guess what? They use the word socialism against the most conservative of all the candidates who ran on the Democratic side. Well, all the viable candidates. I mean, there were some like, you know, Frackenlooper and some of the other ones whose names I don't even remember. But of the, you know, the main contenders, mark my words, Joe Biden is certainly the most conservative. He's also, sorry for the wording here, it's clumsy, but the devil we know. People know him, they trust him, and frankly, look, as much of a Bernie Sanders fan as I am, and I still believe, you know, if he were in the race that he would have won. Now I'm not so sure, actually, because of the fear mongering around the word. Bernie's type of socialism has nothing to do with Cuba or Venezuela or any place that all of these refugees came to South Florida from. Different animal entirely. But we fucked up because we didn't educate anyone. So maybe instead of putting out tweets that say, I'm fine with teaching from home while other workers are paid not to work, it's called socialism. Maybe stop that. That's a false oversimplification and a bad explanation. And when it had so much power, and I do believe it did, it puts us in a bad position moving forward. Yes, words matter. Words matter. So anyway, it's Monday. Again, I'd rather be weekending, painting, cooking, doing anything right now but this, because frankly, it's pissing me off. So here's what I'm going to do. A little later in the hour, we'll have some music to soothe the savage breast, which is how the saying actually goes. But for now, I actually reached out to my friend Jack Rice on Friday because, well, it was a busy day and I thought I'd have time to get him in, and I didn't. But Jack Rice, I wanted to pick his brain. So we couldn't do it Friday, right? So why don't we do it today? So bear with me as I, through the magic of digital audio tape, well, not tape, digital audio recording, we check in with Jack Rice. And we do it like this. Jack Rice, former colleague of mine from Air America, great radio host, who's also an attorney, who is also a former CIA caseworker. And I love getting your thought when the world is just spiraling seemingly out of control, which it's not the world so much. It's just Donald Trump, because today we find out that I know the media doesn't determine who wins. The votes do. And they made it official today. They called CNN and NBC, both called Georgia and Arizona for Biden. It's over. And it's over with a electoral vote, electoral college vote of 306 to 232, which is the landslide that Trump says he won by when he had that same number against Hillary Clinton 4 years ago.
Yeah, it's pretty interesting, isn't it? You know, I am an optimist at heart, and yet when I look at this, I want to say that it's just Donald Trump, but it's not. There's 73 million people who voted for that guy, and when you look at some of the latest polls, at least from the Republican side of this, they say that sometimes as high as 8 in 10 of them have bought into the narrative that this election was stolen, and that is an extraordinary figure, specifically because it was actually promoted by this president, the sitting president as we speak. And when you consider the impact that that has on the transfer of power, it really does make the United States look like many of the countries I've worked in around the world, where you've seen incredible violence and this inability to do that seamlessly. So it's been frustrating to watch, but it's heartening to see that an election that we were all watching, that a record number of people were involved in. One of my daughters, the first time she ever voted, it was very exciting to see it all come down and have so many people, including Republican secretaries of state, push back against the president and say, yeah, guess what? We saw no theft. We saw nothing that was done untoward. And so that part makes me feel really optimistic still.
Yes, yes. The main thing that I wanted to talk to you about today, Jack, is to pull on your experience with the CIA to get your thoughts on what Donald Trump is doing with purging all of these Department of Defense senior officials, Homeland Security officials. There's apparently a lot of high level worry that Gina Haspel, the CIA director, is also on the chopping block, and he's replacing them with Trump loyalists. I mean, I guess grasping at everything to try to stay in office. Should we be afraid of what's going on?
Yes. Yes, we should. I mean, what I'm particularly concerned about is this, is we heard the mantra over and over, I'm going to hire the best.
Yeah.
And we know that's not true. We can say for the last 4 years with confidence that what he has done again and again is when he brought in the adults in the room, he fired those same adults because he didn't like what they said. It's an extraordinary thing, isn't it? I mean, I realize I'm preaching to the choir here, but the idea that what you should want in a leadership is you want to bring in the smartest people in the room, including sometimes especially those who disagree with you. And yet what you get from this president is what he values above all isn't intelligence, isn't capability, certainly isn't experience. It's blind loyalty. Mm-hmm. And that is a disaster when it comes to international politics and certainly to national security. And that's exactly what's going on at the Pentagon. That's going on right now at the Central Intelligence Agency. That's going on at NSA. That's going on in other fields within the government right now, because people are watching this and they realize he's going to be gone in 6 weeks or whatever that number is. The problem is the government needs to continue in that seamless fashion that you and I were discussing.
Right. So, Jack Rice, Trump fires Mark Esper, the defense chief. Is this, I mean, I guess because he dared to challenge him and said that he wouldn't use troops on protesters, on American protesters on their own soil. Trump didn't like that. He wants, I guess, martial law. And I guess he wants people who won't escort him from the White House grounds on January 20th. It seems to me that's what this is about. Can you think of any other reason he'd be firing all these people and replacing them with his cronies?
Well, let's think about Esper first. And you can go back. And one of the things he pushed back on immediately was what the Secretary of Defense was doing with NATO. This is a long-running approach to international politics. And I think this is important to reconsider, is that the United States has had a consistent foreign policy approach, and this applies to both Republicans and Democrats, really since post-World War II. And this multilateral approach was designed to create a certain amount of stability because this allowed the United States to operate. Now, for good or for ill, that's exactly what they did, and NATO was fundamentally designed to do that. And so NATO was designed to create stability, to push back against the Soviet Union, but to provide the United States an opportunity to actually operate on the world stage. And you get the backing of all of these other countries. The United States frequently paid more, but the United States was the number one beneficiary. So if you look at what the Secretary of Defense was doing, in this case, the one who just got fired, he was basically articulating a point that was made by the last seven presidents of the United States.
Uh-huh.
And so the fact that he pushed back on this president was the first sort of salvo. And you saw this president start to wrinkle up as a result of that. And then when we talk about what you just said, the Insurrection Act, the idea that you would put U.S. soldiers in the streets of this country to push back against people who are exercising their constitutional rights is extraordinary. And what exactly Esper was talking about was saying, not only should we not do this, this is a really, really bad idea.
Mm-hmm.
And the idea, and especially, and you and I know this, when you think about that, what comes to mind is this president standing in front of a church that would probably catch fire if he stepped into it, holding a Bible that certainly wasn't his,
right,
for a photo op, yeah, when you have just essentially decimated people exercising their constitutional rights because you decided you can do whatever you want because you're the president.
Mm-hmm.
That is an outrage. And the idea that he pushes this guy out because he pushed back against that says as much about Donald Trump and who he is and what he stands for as most of the other decisions he's been making over the last 4 years.
Most definitely. It looking like he's coming to the realization, mostly because they keep losing in court and, you know, he's got no path to victory. The man lost. He's a loser. In fact, if you go to loser.com, it takes you to Donald Trump's Wikipedia page, in case you were wondering. So Jack Rice, so here we go. Today, we're taping this, actually. It's a busy day for me here. So it's about 10 minutes to 3. In a little over an hour,
on Friday,
Donald Trump is going to speak publicly for the first time since November 5th. It was like 2:30 in the morning when he, you know, went before the press and rambled on like, you know, the deranged fool
he
is.
Yeah, we all saw that one.
Woo! So this will be the first time he has spoken publicly in over a week. This is the longest time he's gone without speaking since he's been in office. Any predictions of what he's going to say?
Well, you know, if I thought he was going to act presidential for the first time in his career, I would imagine what he would say is what we would hope that any sitting president who had lost an election, and we can go back and take a look at what George Bush had said. We can look at those who were running against others and lost. Let's think of John McCain and others. And you look at the eloquence in which they applied to the moment.
Uh-huh.
I don't expect that.
No.
There's nothing that tells me he would do that.
And no.
So my guess is he's going to continue to perpetuate the lies that he has been spouting and pushing amongst his sycophants, you know, for you know, for the last
this
week
whole time.
Plus.
Right. But
so,
here's the thing,
sadly,
Jack.
I expect that.
Here's the thing. He's not the reason for his address is supposed to be to talk about a COVID vaccine, not to deal with the election, not to deal with, you know, conceding, not to deal with trying to help people through this pandemic, to talk about the vaccine. We'll see what happens, because with him, you never know. It's just it'll be interesting.
Well,
no,
there's
what.
Another issue. But before we even get to that, I want to stay back at this Pentagon thing for a second,
yes.
Because we were talking about ESPR being pushed out. It's not just ESPR that I'm really concerned about. There's others that are right underneath him.
Yeah.
And in fact, there are secretary levels, undersecretary level positions that have enormous power inside the Pentagon. And my fear is what the president could do when it comes to that. So when you think about infrastructure inside the U.S. government, here's frequently what will happen. Is when you have a political problem, when you have an ethical problem, when you have something going on inside a department of some kind, what will typically happen is you go up your chain of command. The problem that we have now is we have the blind loyalist at the top of the Department of Defense heap, plus multiple layers underneath him. So that chain of command simply is blocked. It doesn't work. The problem that you have is generally what you all also have is an independent line that runs parallel to it, frequently known as the Inspector General, the IGs inside of the U.S. government. So what you would do is you would normally go to them and say, if there's political influence that's driving this, saying, we want you to do what the Republicans want, not because it's what the Constitution allows or what actually makes policy sense, but because we've decided it might be good for this president or good for whomever. The problem that you have now is that this IG, to whom do they report? Normally, you would go directly up to the secretary or to the undersecretary level and around supervisors. The problem is these are the very people who are the problem. So what you can't do is you can't essentially go to them, which means if you have the power and wherewithal to go to the White House, there's nobody there who's going to listen either.
Mm-hmm.
So what you're doing is you're stifling and strangling the ability of those who are loyal to the U.S. government, not to this president, and specifically loyal to the Constitution. The problem is it strangles them to be able to talk about what's really going on and what really needs to happen because of the essentially placing the pillow over the face of anybody who has the ability to speak. It's a terrible, terrible thing.
Right. Oh, so, you know, we have still, I think it's 68 days until January 20th. He can do a lot of damage in that time. And there are some concerns because of all the debt that he's holding, that when he leaves office, Donald Trump has information that could be worth money to some of our adversaries around the world. And Donald Trump has no loyalty to anybody but his own pocketbook, that he might sell some of those secrets. Are you worried about any of that?
I'm very worried about that.
Right.
I mean, if we pulled back for a second and even just let's peel the Trump name off of this and talk about security for a minute. So we think about confidential information. We think about secret, top secret, and then you get up above that. And that's something called SCI, a sensitive compartmented information. The idea is that what you do is, even if you have those clearances, which I did, I never got access to everything. I was able to get access to this piece and that piece and the other piece in that SCI range. The problem is what a president has the capability to do, any president, is they have not just access to everything in the SCI. They can get sources and methods. So in other words, they can actually say, this person, this woman in this position, she's the one who gave it to me. And we can talk, and that person can also, the president can also find out how they got it, with whom, the sources that support it, and how they got it back to where they were trying to get. So in other words, the crown jewels, if you will, on the human intelligence piece, the satellite intelligence pieces of these, the technical pieces, you can get access to all of that. This is worth billions and even trillions of dollars. And so what that means is any sitting president has an extraordinary amount of information at their disposal. Now, there's a reason for that, because ultimately the buck stops them, if you want to be Harry Truman, not this president, because nothing is his fault.
Of course, not my fault.
But that's what a president is supposed to do. The problem that we have is this. If you think about anybody who has classified information, the things that I'm afraid of is I'm afraid of anybody who is deeply in debt, more than $400 million, who's angry at the U.S. government, who is arguing that there's some sort of weird conspiracy against them. They're disgruntled, they're dissatisfied, they're aggrieved, any of those things. The fear is that that is exactly the kind of person who is easy to target as a mark for recruitment from a foreign service.
Mm-hmm.
So this is a president, when he walks out the door, who's going to be personally liable for $400 million and is going to have to be working the world. You think there's not going to be intelligence services in those countries saying, you know what? And they won't even necessarily step to the door like they're an intelligence service. They're just going to say, yeah, let's talk. Let's figure out where we're going. And by the time it's all over, stuff that was really classified, really important, could very well end up in the coffers of DGSE from the French or the Cubans or the North Koreans or the Russians or the Saudis or anybody else. And the thing is we may not necessarily even know it. And at the end of the day, what that means is that if that information ends up in those places, the sources and methods places, some of these countries will then turn around and track down the assets. That's the term we use in the intelligence community, the people we get it from. And they will track those people down, and they will kill them and their entire extended families.
Aye.
And that's the blowback.
Yep.
And this could destroy years and years and years and years of work of the United States and put us in the worst position we may have ever been in if this could go down that path.
Oh, my goodness. Well, on that happy note, Jack Rice, do you have any doubt that even though Joe Biden hasn't been given the clearance by the GSA to begin the official transition, that he's got people who are already on this situation, that there are intelligence officials or people monitoring Trump and the situation to make sure that nothing evil happens?
Well, there are, and obviously, I mean, one of the things to realize is a lot of the people who are advisors to the vice president and to the president-elect, and I like to say that, is that these are very smart, very experienced people. And Joe Biden himself, I mean, this is a really, really smart guy with extraordinary amounts of experience. He was the second most experienced person in the U.S. Senate when it came to foreign policy. I think he was behind Ruger, but other than the Republican, in terms of experience, he's extraordinary when it comes to that. But he also is one of those guys who is smart enough to realize that you find people who are smarter than you everywhere, and you put them around you. That's one of the things I appreciate. So he is in that place. So he's going to continue to get those pieces, although he is not at this point getting the briefings that he should be receiving. This is part of that seamless transition of power problem that we're not seeing, because this president is acting like a petulant child who's decided he's taking his marbles and going home.
Right. Well,
but the marbles aren't his, by the way. That's the thing. The marbles are not his. Intelligence is not something that's owned by any person. When I was working in the intelligence business, I was working with the U.S. government's intelligence. When this president was in power, and he still is, he is working with the intelligence of the U.S. government, of which he may be a part. But when he walks away, it is supposed to exist without him.
Right. That's what's so frightening, because these are things over which, you know, obviously we have no control. And we, the average layperson out here, doesn't have much knowledge, which is the reason I wanted to talk to you today, Jack Rice. This is going to be a very rough 68 days. And I guess we just all need to stay vigilant. I was a little concerned in hearing Joe Biden that his attitude was so almost cavalier. We'll be fine. Don't worry. It's all going to be good. We're good. I don't need the intelligence. It's okay.
Yeah, I know. I'm with you on that. But I actually think that that's smart in a sense.
Yeah, it is.
In that Yeah, and that I understand he has the right to be outraged, but at the end of the day, I don't think that necessarily helps him. And you have to realize that he's also trying to find a way as much as possible to pull this president, Trump, sort of out of the fire, because we don't want him to implode. We really
right.
don't.
No, we don't.
Because of the potential. I mean, you know, when I talk about this stuff, and you and I have known each other for many years, is that you realize this isn't hypothetical. Do you remember when Trump was in the Oval Office with the Russian foreign minister and the ambassador?
Yeah.
What he did was he actually disclosed classified information
about the Israelis.
Iranians.
Yes.
And an Iranian threat.
Yes.
Yeah, and about the Israelis.
Right.
But another thing that he did was in 2019, about 2 years later, he actually decided to tweet an aerial image of an Iranian launch pad.
I remember that.
Now, when he did that, this literally is one of the most closely held secrets in the U.S. government. And the reason it is because frequently if those are shot from satellites.
Mm-hmm.
And when you shoot something from a satellite, what it does is it not just gives you the photo, it actually gives you positioning and the ability to determine the capability of the satellite and where they're actually going. Again, this is the kind of stuff that if I had done this, I would be in a cell for 25 years.
Sure.
I mean, it's really that bad.
Well, with a little luck,
cavalierly say,
with a little luck, he'll be in a cell for longer than that. And we need to get him out of office.
I don't know how much longer he's got, but I'm sure we could find a space for him someplace. Hell, he liked the Guantanamo so much.
Yeah.
You know, I mean,
we got a lot of cells there. Jack Rice, I got to run. It's obviously a crazy busy day. Thank you for checking in. I always appreciate your input and your expertise. Jack Rice, find him on Twitter, on the Facebook at jackrice.net, and occasionally on the radio. Not often enough. Thanks, Jack.
All the best.
So that was Jack Rice. And again, we taped that on Friday because I wound up doing two shows, my show and the broadcast on Friday. I was just getting lots of content together and I wound up not having room for that. And I was going to do a special bonus episode over the weekend. And then I decided I'd just have my weekend instead. And so I thought I would share it with you today, and for good reason, by the way. So we were talking about, you know, Trump speaking for the first time. We taped that before he went out into the Rose Garden and read from his book like he's a third grader reading what somebody else wrote for him for the very first time because he doesn't have a clue what's going on. So he did that, didn't take any questions, did not acknowledge the election that just happened and the fact that he lost, or the fact that there was a recount going on in Georgia or anything else like that. You know, this is Donald Trump. Pretend something's not there, pretend it'll go away, and just keep plowing through. Obviously, it didn't work. COVID is ravaging the nation, as it is the planet, right? And Donald Trump has been missing in action. Today, we learned from the guy who's in charge of the Warp Speed Task Force, that Trump has never been involved in it, but he's trying to take credit for the Pfizer vaccine, which wasn't even part of the Operation Warp Speed. They didn't take the money. And Moderna, the one we heard about today, that they're saying is 94% effective in the first round of testing. Again, yes, it's part of this Warp Speed program, but Donald Trump had nothing to do with it. Go figure. He's lying to you again. 65 days. All right. Let's let Progressive Voices go to a quick break. We'll be right back. Hopefully that worked today. And for everyone else who's still with us, I'm going to play for you a little tune. Boy, everyone got creative over the weekend. So I'm going to play for you this one from Roy Zimmerman. Now, Roy Zimmerman apparently has been doing this for a long time. I only discovered him a couple of months ago, but he's sort of like a I'm drawing a blank, like a Mark Russell or Tom Lehrer, you know. He is a I don't even know what to call him. He's not just a comedian. He's a socially conscious singer-songwriter, and he came up with a little ditty, a little post-election ditty. You'll recognize the tune Let's just let him at it. Yeah, this is Roy Zimmerman. Here we go.
Hi, Don said to Rudy, hey, throw me a presser. Rudy said, anything you say, press yes, sir. Don said, now. Rudy said, sure. What should I tell him? And Don said, you're gonna go out there with a straight face and tell him I won. Rudy said, where you want the shilling done? Four Seasons Total Landscaping, son. Don tweeted big event at the Four Seasons. Tweeted then deleted for mysterious reasons. Don said go. Rudy he went, wondering if the president meant Four Seasons, the hotel, or the other one. Between the porno store and the crematorium, Four Seasons Total Landscaping, son.
I love this.
Hey, go out and tell them we got a path. Never mind fairness, never mind math. Election fraud, that's a thing we can fix if we just get the voting out of politics. Go get them, Rudy, while I hide from everyone. Rudy said, yeah, Chris, consider it done. It's Four Seasons Total Landscaping, son. Rudy, he looked at the places next door, a crematorium and a porno store. As metaphors go, that one's hard to ignore. But somehow he managed and he told the press corps, this race ain't over, people, it's just begun. Press said they called, yay, Rudy, the race is run. Here at Four Seasons Total Landscaping, son, you're totally hosed, Rudy, pardon the pun. At Four Seasons Total Landscaping, son, sounds like you're spreading manure. At Four Seasons Total Landscaping, son,
Four Seasons Total Landscaping, son.
And now, back to Nicole on Progressive Voices and NicoleSandler.com.
Yes, obviously, a Bob Dylan song parody from Roy Zimmerman, and someone in the chat room, Proud Scale, asked Zimmerman, any relation to Robert Zimmerman, which, of course, is Bob Dylan's real name, and probably not, just, you know, a good parody. Roy Zimmerman, good stuff. All right, so, well, let's wait no longer. I should start our, here. It is Music Monday, isn't it?
We could all use some healing these days, so we turn to the power of music. Each Monday, we welcome another artist to share some songs and stories as the Nicole Sandler Show presents the Monday Music Sunset Sessions.
All right. And so today we welcome back our friend Marvin Etzioni to the show. Marvin, of course, a founding member of Lone Justice, who's been, recording and producing and doing his own thing for, well, a lot of years. It's been a lot of years since Lone Justice, huh, Marvin? That was like back in the 80s, wasn't it?
Back in the 80s, yeah, 1880s.
In the olden days, but, you know, that's what happens with us old people. But, you know, we keep reinventing ourselves, as, you know, us old folks do. And so you have a new album out. We talked a little about it last week when you joined us, called What's the Mood of the Country Now? And we played one song last week. We're going to play a different song today. And this one grabbed me immediately, and it's so perfect for these times. So I want to ask you about God Bless the Homeless, because this, first of all, musically, it's fantastic, but lyrically and just the mood of the country, everything, it's something that just speaks to where we are today.
What's really interesting, thank you, Nicole, for having me again. I love being on your show. What's interesting about the song is that I started writing the song in 1985, and I had performed it at a homeless benefit at the Palace with people like Jackson Brown, and Mick Fleet was on drums, and it was kind of a big event. And I got to close this night, and I kept the song with me, And I just kept working on it. I brought in a friend of mine, Sam Lorber, and he helped me finish up the song. And unfortunately, things have gotten worse since when I first started the song, you know. And living in L.A., it's kind of an unbelievable thing that you can go down, drive down major boulevards and you just see, you know, these tents everywhere, everywhere you go. It used to be you have to go downtown and it would be really in parts of areas that you wouldn't normally go to. Now it's everywhere you go. And it's very sad. Yesterday I met a homeless man. I just sent you a photo of this guy, Tang. And he's a homeless guy on a wheelchair. And I started talking to him. And I bought him lunch. And he wasn't wearing a mask. So I happened to have an extra one. So I gave it to him. And this is real stuff that's going on. And I really wish that this song was lyrically dated. I really wish. It's like, what are you talking about? We have the homeless problem in any city in this country. But I felt it was important to kind of, in a sense, kick the album off with that, because it's a central theme. You know, where do these people sleep at night?
Yeah.
And how far away are any of us from being in a situation like that? It stayed with me all these years later, the song and the content of the song and the importance and the relevance of it.
So when did you write this one, actually?
I started in 1985.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
You know,
and I recorded it a while ago. And, you know, it just seemed like it felt so current to me when I recently listened to the song when I was assembling the record just a couple few months ago. And it felt like this was the song to kind of kick off what this album was about.
Well, then let's listen to it.
All right.
Yeah. Again, the album is called, and I didn't bring the picture of the album cover. I'll have to find it while the song is playing to put up on the screen. So we're not just, people aren't just looking at us as we're listening to the song. We'll do that. But the album is called What's the Mood of the Country Now? And again, that's something that you started writing right after 9/11. So this,
that's correct.
It's just everything is built to this point. And I guess.
Yes, right.
Now,
yeah, I kind of bank, to be honest with you, just real briefly, Nicole, is that I built the entire album with really the hopes of the election in mind, you know, that it was really, you know, it was like I wanted to make sure that the album was released before the election. I didn't want the album to be a reaction to the election. I wanted it to be to come out ahead of time. And I wanted to take that chance that in hopes that things would change, that's what this album is about.
Yeah. And not that Donald Trump ever gave two moments of thought to the homeless. Hopefully that will change. Although, you know, not much was done for them during the 8 years of the Obama administration either. This is a really, really important topic. And not only that, it's going to get worse because the pandemic is not letting up. The moratorium on evictions, at least here in Florida, our governor DeSantis, who I've renamed Ron Death Sentence, is he did away with the moratorium the beginning of October. So now people who have been, you know, lost their jobs due to COVID and can't pay rent, a lot of them are going to be thrown out on the street. We're going to, as bad as our housing crisis is now, we're going to have a bigger eviction crisis over the next few months. So everyone should hear the song. Again, it's called God Bless the Homeless. It's Marvin Etzioni on the Nicole Sandler Show. Here we go.
Hey, Mr. President,
Wow. God bless the homeless. Marvin Etzioni from the new album, What's the Mood of the Country Now? I love that. That song is just so good on so many levels. Who is the saxophone player there at the end?
That's the great David Rolicky, lives in L.A. And that was, we were at Ocean Way Studios. We set up the band, me and the rhythm section, Billy Moeller and Brian Head, and David Leach on congas, and David's throughout the whole album. Great percussionist player, and then David Rolicky played the horn solo, and that was a live performance. The only thing we overdubbed on the record was I added mandolin, and then we put Cy's vocal on in a different session because she wasn't at that session. But Rolicky just. That was a moment of sheer inspiration with Rolicky taking the song. I said, just come in at the end of the song. I'll cue you.
And he just took off. Like, wow.
Yeah.
Yeah, so, that was good.
You get one of those.
Yeah, that's awesome. I first listened through. I was like, I was digging on the groove of the song, and then that came in. It's like, whoa, it's just awesome. Now, last week we gave away a couple of copies of the CD. You want to do that again?
Sure, let's do it.
Okay, so we'll do it like we did last time. The first two to email me, Nicole@NicoleSandler.com. Be sure to put in your mailing address, too, because last week I had to chase after you. And so the first two will get through. We'll send you a copy of the CD. Yeah, so it's newly out. So you recorded this during the pandemic.
What happened was on March 13th, Friday the 13th, I was in the studio and I was talking to Adam Pike, the engineer, and I said, you know, why don't we compile all the songs for What's the Mood of the Country? I've been working on this record for years. And I narrowed it down like maybe 14, 15 songs. And so I said, send me those songs. I'll listen to them over the week and then let's do some overdubs on Tuesday. Bang, on Sunday, we had the lockdown, including studios.
Wow.
So I had to finish the album by talking to the engineer on the phone. I would send a track for conga overdubs, to David Leach at his home studio. So it was really challenging. But I was up for the challenge because now I was on a mission more than ever to get this done.
Right. So yeah. No. So it's great. Now, Cy, the singer with you, there's a bit of an X vibe to the sound of that song. Yeah.
A couple people have said that. I've actually worked with John Doe before. He's on my previous album, Marvin Country. We did a song called Grapes of Wrath that we used to play in Lone Justice, and when we played it, people say, oh, that song kind of has an X Stones kind of vibe.
Interesting.
So I brought him on my version of the song, but it wasn't really, I didn't really have any intention. You know, I'm a big fan of Marvin Gaye and Tammy Terrell and all that. And I didn't have a specific sound in mind. I just knew that whenever I sang with Cy Smith, always magical. You know, it was just like something. It was just a connection between the two of us. We had done gigs together. We'd done studio dates. And I didn't know that this was going to end up, she'd be on so much of the album. But that's just how it ended up. And she was happy with it, and I was. And so I'm glad that she's, getting attention on the album as well, because it's well-deserved. And she's also an artist in her own right. So check out Cy Smith.
Cy Smith. Good to know. Yeah. Marvin Etzioni, again, the record is out. It's available wherever you get your music. It's called What's the Mood of the Country Now? It's great. Thank you for doing this, and thank you for coming on to talk about these songs, because socially conscious music is important. You know, I lament sometimes the lack of protest music, but it's calling attention to the things in society that we need to fix, and God knows there's a lot that we need to fix right now.
All right, well, be well. God
you
bless
too. Thank and, you so much.
All right, thank you.
All right.
We'll talk soon.
Take care,
okay,
Marvin.
Bye-bye.
Marvin Etzioni. Again, do check out his music. Now, tomorrow is Tuesday. Got a Laugh will be here, as usual. Wednesday on the program, Mike Lux is joining us. Mike Lux is a, after today's episode with Twitter and fighting with the, our side, Mike Lux wrote an amazing piece about the future of the Democratic Party and how we work out some kind of like detente, if you will, between the progressives and the corporate Dems, for lack of a better term. And I'm going to have to throw in the Democratic Socialists as well. Right? Howie will be here Thursday. Friday, John Nichols of The Nation will join us to sort of do a kind of a wraparound of what the hell is going on. So trying to do a little bit of everything, trying to keep my bearings straight, trying to keep my sanity in check while we get the orange idiot out of the Oval Office. And we need to get out the vote in Georgia. I just saw someone posted, what good is a John Ossoff? I'll tell you what good a John Ossoff is. If he and Reverend Raphael Warnock pull off these victories, it means taking the power of the Senate away from Mitch McConnell. That's all you need to know. Sometimes issues trump the bigger question, as it were. All right, we'll continue tomorrow. Thanks for listening, everyone. Have a great night.